Despite any evidence to the contrary, Wash Keo was still searching for the vein of gold that had spat out the turkey egg-sized nugget that was wearing a hole in his pocket. There was no way he was going to leave it back in camp, where just anyone might come along and accidentally find it. Nope, he was keeping it on his person, even though it felt as if it was adding 10 pounds to every stride he took. He sat down for a minute to catch his breath and grab a drink from his canteen. He'd gone through his whiskey supply already, finished it off the day he found the gold rock. But he figured he was entitled to it. When a man found something like that, he had best get himself good and drunk. He was almost out of water. He supposed he'd have to go back up into town to replenish his supply, and mentally flogged himself for not catching some of the rainwater. He could have done it. There was some canvas to trap it in. But the canvas had gone unused, and now he was running low. He figured that maybe he could stay put for the rest of the day and part of tomorrow. There were plenty of barrel cactus between him and town, and he could always raid a couple of those if he got desperate. Of course, he'd have to be pretty damn desperate to do that. Water from a barrel cactus tasted like, well, like water from a barrel cactus. Unconsciously, he made a face. He stared at his canteen for a long minute before he lifted it to his lips once more. And then he stoppered it and slung it back over his shoulder, standing up slowly.
All right, Gold. You best quit hiding from me. This here's Wash Keo, and I means it.
He started off again, his diligent eyes to the ground. In his office, Jason was struggling with a letter to the U.S. Marshal's office up in Prescott. He still didn't know what to do with Rafe Lynch, who was still in town, and whose presence he thought the territorial marshal should be aware of. At least, he'd want to know if he were the territorial marshal. He reread it, then balled the paper in his hands and pitched it into the wastebasket. It joined roughly 20 other crumpled pieces of paper, his whole afternoon's work. Every letter he had started to write had turned into what sounded to him like begging. Or worse, whining. He didn't think that was a very professional way to contact the marshal's office, but he couldn't keep the fear out of his writing.
Ugh, they're coming in!
Who's coming in?
It's a whole new wagon train with goods to sell and folks wanting to buy stuff.
Ward had a right to be excited. A wagon train always brought good news to Fury, in the form of new settlers and fresh trade. Jason smiled for the first time that afternoon. The day wasn't a total loss after all. Ward leaned across the desk and jerked Jason's sleeve.
Come on, they're pulling up now, and you gotta make an official presence or something.
Jason put his pen down and stood up. Whatever would take him away from this blasted letter was something to celebrate. They walked up the street, then down to the south gate, which Ward had already opened. Sure enough, wagons were pulling into place and lining up outside, all down the south wall. The people in the front, who had already set their brakes and climbed down from their seats, were coming forward to glad-hand him. The first among them was the wagon master, who introduced himself as Riley Havens. Jason made a quick assessment as they shook hands. Havens was sandy-haired and tanned, and about 30 or so, he guessed.
Pleased to meet y'all. You fellas, you just call me Riley, okay?
All right, Riley. I'm Jason. Welcome to Fury. Looking for anything special, or are you folks just glad for a place to camp near what we laughingly call civilization?
Both, I reckon. Yeah, we're in need of canvas. Yeah, that big storm the other day yanked the tops clean off a couple of wagons. Reckon they're in the Pacific by now. And we're in need of a wheelwright and an axle man, if and you got one.
Reckon we used up most of the canvas already, but there might be a couple of wagon covers tucked away someplace. And as for your wheel and axle man, we've got one who'd be happy for the business.
Yes, sir, we sure do. Jason, you want us should ride out to the Morton place and get Milton Griggs?
Tomorrow morning will be soon enough, Ward. In the meantime, Riley, y'all come on in and grab yourself a drink. Water, whiskey, beer, whatever you want.
He was about to take his leave of Riley and go back to face the letter when a big, burly man stepped up.
You the sheriff?
Jason noticed that Riley had taken a step back.
Yeah, what of it?
I'm looking for somebody. Rafe Lynch is the name. The son of a bitch in town.
Might I ask who's wanting to know?
I'm Sampson Davis, and I'm here to kill the rat bastard.
Jason and Ward walked back toward the office, unwilling to speak until they were well out of earshot of Samson Davis. It was one thing to have one killer in town, but another entirely to have two of them.
Look, that Samson guy, he's saying right out that he's gonna kill Lynch. But Lynch ain't done a dang thing wrong here in Fury.
And if he kills him in Fury, he'll hang for murder, just like anybody else would.
Take a mighty stout rope to hang a big, muzzled-up fella like that, Jason.
I'll keep that in mind, Ward.
Jason opened the door to his office. They both stepped inside and ran smack into Rafe Lynch. Jason had been wanting to talk to him, but he would rather have been the one to pick the time and place. He had only glimpsed Lynch in person and seen his poster, and now he decided that the poster hadn't done him justice. No wonder Jenny was so taken with him.
Lynch, what brings you to Fury in general, and my office in particular?
Jason felt Ward take a discreet step to the side, then halt, rock solid as usual. It was good to know Ward had his back.
Guess you already know my name. And I know yours, too. You're Marshal Jason Fury, brother to the charming Miss Jenny Fury and son of the late, lamented Jedediah Fury.
Rafe stuck out his hand, and Jason reluctantly took it.
And you're Ward Wanamaker, unless I miss my guess, have I?
Next, Ward took his hand and gave it a half-hearted shake.
I'm Wanamaker, all right.
You'll pardon my deputy. Like me, he's just wondering what a fella wanted in California for killing eight men is doing here in Fury.
Rafe turned around and pulled out the chair opposite Jason's desk.
Well, you boys ain't nothing if not direct. You mind if I set myself down? I got a feeling this is going to be a long palaver.
Help yourself.
Jason moved around to his chair on the other side of the desk. Ward moved across the room and took a seat in front of the cells, where he could keep an eye on Lynch's gun hand. Jason crossed his arms on the desktop and leaned forward.
So, why Fury? How come we're blessed, or damned, with your presence?
Because you're close enough to California that I can make it in a day's ride, and because rumor has it that you run a friendly little town. Am I right?
So far.
I like you, Fury. You got a by-God sense of humor.
I mean, how long are you planning to stick around? You waiting for somebody or what?
Trying to tell you, I'm not meeting anybody or making plans for anything, and there ain't nobody here I want to hurt. All I want is safe harbor, like those sailor boys say. I promise to mind my P's and Q's while I'm in town. Hell, while I'm in the whole territory.
Despite himself, Jason was warming to Lynch as he spoke. He could see why Lynch would want, and need, a safe place. And he didn't seem like such a bad fella, but still.
What about all those men you killed? They probably could have used a safe harbor somewhere, too.
I ain't gonna go into it now, but there's a good reason attached to each one of those killings.
Lynch stood up, startling Jason, who rose too.
Well, I just wanted to check in and let you know I ain't looking for any trouble. I'm staying across the street at the saloon in case you want to get a hold of me. I like it at Miss Abigail's, but there ain't much of anybody in there to get up a decent poker game with. The gals who drive by are a bit on the tender side, too.
I imagine they are.
Jason was glad that Lynch had taken up residence at the other end of town in the saloon. And he also hoped that Lynch kept true to his word and stayed out of trouble. They'd taken a few steps toward the door before Jason remembered and stopped, grabbing Lynch's arm.
Wait. There's a fella in town. Just rode in with the wagon train, and he's looking for you. Says his name is Samson Davis, and that he's gonna...
You gonna kill me?
Jason nodded.
I knew he was gonna catch up with me sooner or later. Just sorry it had to be here. Did you tell him I was in town?
Already seemed to know. Nasty sort of fella.
Yep, that's Davis. Well, I'll be on the watch for him. Thanks, fellas.
He tipped his hat and walked out. Jason watched through the window as he looked up the street, toward Abigail's, then down it toward the saloon. Finally, he set off for the saloon, walking at a casual clip.
He's sure something.
Yeah, he surely is.
Finally satisfied with the content and phrasing of his letter to the U.S. Marshal, which included the fact that Fury had not one but two gunslingers in town, Jason sealed the envelope.
I'm leaving, Ward.
Up the street he went towards Solomon's store, after checking to make sure the end of the street with the saloon was quiet. Everything was calm. He momentarily wondered if Jenny had been out to buy anything edible, and if there'd be a treat for supper. It didn't last long, though. He put his hand on the latch to Solomon's mercantile.
Solomon? Hey, Sol, you around? It's Jason.
Hold on to your skivvies. I'm coming already.
Solomon himself came around the corner with a wide smile on his face.
Jason, what can I do for you on this fine day?
Jason grinned back at him. He reached into his pocket and pulled out the letter and then some change.
Got a letter to go out.
Solomon looked at the address on the letter Jason slid across the counter.
To Prescott? Be 35 cents. Sorry it's so much, but there's hardly anything else going out, and Grady won't take his confounded horse out of the stable for less than a dollar.
Well, you tell Grady that there's another dollar in it for him if he gets that letter to Prescott in less than 2 days, all right?
You're paying?
I'm paying.
I'll tell him. And by the way, did I tell you, Rachel and I, we have a house guest.
I'd hardly call your new daughter a house guest, Saul.
No, a real house guest, and a Jew to boot. He turned up this afternoon looking for something kosher to eat, and we asked him to stay. Rachel, she's not up to cooking yet, but I made him the best and biggest kosher meal he'd had in a long time. We're celebrating Sarah's birth, you know.
Jason grinned at him. He knew that Solomon had been longing for some Jewish company, and he hoped this fellow would stay. He'd certainly perked Saul up.
Congratulations again, Solomon. I'm glad you finally have somebody Jewish to talk to. Well, you know what I mean. And you've already named the baby?
Yes, we have, and I certainly do. And thank you, Jason, my friend.
Jason nodded and grinned.
She is quiet and calm, and he is a little on the quiet side at first, too. But I think he'll eventually open up and be hearty company.
I'm sure he will. Well, Solomon, I best get home and see if Jenny remembered to fix me some supper.
If she didn't, you come back here. We have some fine kosher brisket left over, if I say so myself.
I'll keep that in mind.
Jason had walked halfway home before he realized he'd forgotten to ask Solomon what his guest's name was.
Well, it'll wait till tomorrow.
When Jason walked in the front door, the first thing Jenny asked about was the Cohen's baby, and Jason dutifully reported. He also reported that they had a house guest, but couldn't give any more information on the subject. Jenny had been up to the wagon train, as had Megan, judging by Jenny's pretty new hair bow and Megan's new shoes.
They let out school early today.
Yeah, Miss Electa Morton let everybody go at 2:30, and I closed up the bank at 3, so we went together. There's still a lot we didn't see, so we're going back in the morning.
Jason clapped his hands over his ears.
You two don't stop doing that. You're going to drive me to the asylum.
Jenny slid a plate of beefsteak in front of him. Megan sat across from him, chin planted primly on the backs of her hands while she grinned.
Yeah, very funny, the both of you.
Jason sliced into his steak. It was cooked perfectly. Pink and juicy on the inside, slightly charred on the outside. It seemed like everybody else in town liked their beef cooked to the consistency of shoe leather, but not him. Home was the only place where he could get a steak cooked right. The next morning found Jason and Jenny and Megan all up bright and early and outside the stockade taking in the sights of the wagon train. Most of its members were just plain folks trying to get back to Kansas City, but a few had fancy goods and the like. One of them, Mrs. Judith Strong, had a wagon packed nearly to the canopy with all kinds of yard goods and an assortment of notions, and she sold both the girls the material to make one new dress each. While the girls were doing their business with Mrs. Strong, Jason sought out Riley, the wagon master.
Where's Sampson Davis this morning?
I don't know. Lost him last night. Figured he was staying at your hotel or something.
Already been there, and it's a boarding house, actually.
Whatever. About that axle and wheel, man, I wondered if...
Ward rode out first thing. Ought to be back early this afternoon. Give him time, it's a ways.
No offense.
None taken. All your folks make it through the storm all right? Except the ones that lost their lids, I mean.
Two of us didn't make it. Wind took their wagon and rolled it a couple of times. They got crushed under the weight of their own belongings.
Shame. They linger?
Nope. Died instantaneous.
Jason nodded. Some things were best when they were over quickly. A boy came walking toward them. a boy whose heels were tagged by the goofiest-looking hound dog that Jason had ever seen.
What the hell is that?
Up there? That's Bill Cratchit.
I mean, what's that thing following him?
Oh, that's Grimm's dog, Hannibal.
When Bill Cratchit and Hannibal neared them, Jason waved them over.
Can I see your dog?
Sure, mister.
Jason here isn't just a Mr. Bill. He's Marshall Fury.
Sorry, Marshall. I didn't know.
Jason looked up from the dog, which was happily wagging his tail.
That's all right, Bill. You just call me Jason. Say, this is a right friendly dog you got here. Or I guess he's the Grimm's dog, right?
Bill glanced quickly at Riley.
Yes, sir, he is.
I don't believe I've ever seen anything quite like him.
Neither had anybody else on the train. He's a oneer, all right.
Bill dropped his hand down to scratch the dog's head, and Hannibal complied by leaning his body against the boy's leg and nearly knocking him over. Jason shot out a hand to steady him.
Thanks.
Jason noticed that the dog hadn't moved a muscle, except for his eyelids, which were drifting closed. He decided he could really get to like this dog. A new fellow, soberly dressed, came walking up from the rear behind Bill Cratchit. He stopped and tipped his head to Riley.
Good morning, Mr. Havens. You too, young Bill?
Morning, Mr. Bean.
This is one of our men of God, Jason. The Reverend Mr. Fletcher Bean. And Fletcher, this is Jason Fury, Marshal of Fury.
Jason stuck out his hand, and Mr. Bean took it.
God bless you, son.
Good, thanks. The same to you, Reverend.
Their little group soon turned into a larger one, with folks walking up and down the line of wagons to introduce themselves. Jason shook hands with over a dozen people, although later he'd be dogged if he could remember any of their names. Well, he guessed he wouldn't have to unless some trouble came up. And right now, it was looking like any trouble would be inside Fury itself. Giving a last pat to Hannibal, Jason excused himself and started back to the town's entrance and the sheriff's office. He passed Jenny and Megan, who seemed to be dickering with somebody over something, and waved as he passed. When he went through the gate, he wondered if he should stop by the mercantile and meet Solomon's company, then decided against it. There would be time for that later, and right now he was thinking that he'd better talk to Rafe Lynch. He had seen neither hide nor hair of Samson Davis, and just hoped that he hadn't found Lynch first. There were several girls in evidence, although it wasn't yet 9 in the morning when he got to the saloon.
Seen Rafe Lynch this morning, Sam?
Oh, it's way too early for him, Jason. He might wander down around 10 or so, probably later. Got a message you want passed along?
Tell him I want to talk to him. He doesn't need to come to the office, though. I'll come back down here. Oh, and Sam, anybody else comes looking for him, you tell him he ain't here.
Anybody?
Anybody.
Will do.
Sam went back to polishing bar glasses.
I'm telling you, Solomon, I don't like him.
But he's a Jew.
For Solomon, that overrode anything else, despite the fact that Samson made him a little nervous, too.
I don't care if he's a rabbi. I want him out of here and away from the children.
Shh! Do you want they should be hearing you?
I don't like him. I think he is a bad man. Solomon, try to act like your namesake. Don't be blindly accepting him just because of his race.
Rachel, I don't know how to answer. My head pulls one way, my heart pulls the other.
Oh, think about it. And while you are doing this thinking, you had best get ready to go down and open the store. The Tempus, she is fugiting.
She leaned over and brushed his lips with a kiss, then gave him a playful shove. Solomon rose and stretched his arms.
Women, they are never happy. You go right, she says left. You go up, she says down. You take brisket, she says the corned beef is better. You ask for...
Solomon? The store.
When he left the bedroom and walked into the open space that comprised the rest of their quarters, all three of the boys and their new baby sister were still soundly sleeping in their beds. But Samson Davis was nowhere to be seen.
Where on earth? Oh, the wagons, of course.
Samson had left something necessary in his wagon and had gone back for it. Solomon had been looking forward to a morning prayer with him, but it would wait. God was patient. He pulled off a hunk of brisket, put it between two slices of Rachel's homemade bread, and headed quietly down the stairs to the mercantile.
Davis. Sampson Davis.
Back in his office, Jason went through files, searching in vain for anything on Sampson Davis. He only had a little information on California criminals, just what the territorial marshal's office deemed fit to send him.
We should be on a stage route. We got lodgings and water and a stable for the horses. We could sure use the folks coming and going and the steady mail service, too. Grady.
He'd forgotten to check and see if Grady had made it out of town yet. He poured himself the last cup of coffee and slouched down at his desk. He'd walk up to the mercantile later, but first he needed a sit-down and a drink.
Files are tiring things.
He happened to glance out the window and see Jenny across the street. She frequently ran errands for Electa Morton and was emerging from Salmon Kendall's printing shop with a stack of papers in her arms, so he didn't think much about it. She started toward the jail, walking across the street, when suddenly Rafe Lynch came vaulting off the sidewalk where she had been and shoved her over, knocking her and her papers to the ground.
What the?
Before Jason could stand up, a runaway driverless wagon flashed right over the place where his sister had been walking, and Rafe Lynch was helping her to her feet again.
Oh, Jesus.
He got to his feet and rushed outside, running to Jenny's side. He grabbed her by the shoulders.
You could have been killed if Rafe hadn't pushed you out of the way. Don't you know how to look both ways before you cross the street? Have you lost your senses?
And then he suddenly hugged her to him so tightly that before he knew it, she was struggling, and he realized she couldn't breathe. He loosened his grip and allowed her to push away.
Oh, does this mean that if I don't succeed in killing myself, you'll do it for me?
Precisely, precisely.
One of the Milcher kids opened the church door and peeked out, and Jason remembered the kitten.
Oh, Jenny, I got a present for you, but it won't be ready for 6 or 8 weeks.
What, Jason? What is it?
Well, I call it Dusty.
Dusty? What's a Dusty?
Yeah, what's a Dusty?
Jason stared at Rafe, who he'd forgotten was there for a moment.
A Dusty is the name of something small and white and fluffy and incredibly sweet, just like you, Jenny. I was born just a few nights ago.
Oh, yeah!
Rafe made a pained face. That was good.
The Milchers! You got one of those new kittens for me, didn't you, Jason? Oh, I could just hug you.
Just wait until you deliver those papers to Miss Morton.
There was a kitten in the picture now, and everything was right with the world.
Well, congratulations, Miss Jenny.
Hadn't you best run those papers up to Miss Morton?
Oh, gosh, I almost forgot. Rafe, thank you so much. Come to dinner tonight.
Then she fairly ran up the street. Well, as close as a lady could come to running. When she stopped outside the schoolroom door, she paused, turned, and tossed a kiss to Jason, who made a show of catching it and then pressing it to his heart. He and Rafe stood there a minute, until Jason thought to get out of the street.
Yeah, Davis could be anywhere. Let's get out of the line of fire.
Your office or mine?
Yours, I think.
It was a lot more lively than it had been the first time Jason had been in that day, and he tagged after Rafe, who led him to an empty table.
This an all right?
Jason nodded, and the men sat down. Libations arrived, and both men made themselves comfortable.
Why is Sampson Davis after you?
Because I shot his no-account brother-in-law. I only shot him in the shoulder. Wasn't my fault it went septic and he died. And I shot him because he murdered my daddy over some gold shares daddy had. Just outright murdered him in cold blood. At least I had the gumption to call him out into the street to answer for it in a fair fight. So now I got Sampson Davis dogging me everywhere I go. Whole damn family should have stayed back east.
Rafe took a long drink of his beer, as if the telling of his story had exhausted him. Jason, surprised but finally educated, followed suit.
That one of the murders on your poster?
Yeah. California's real nitpicky about that stuff. You want another beer?
Jason looked down at his glass, which he had emptied, much to his surprise.
Yeah.
Rafe looked over at the bar, somehow caught Sam's attention, and held up two fingers. Sam nodded, and before they knew it, a blonde girl in a fancy green silk dress was sliding the drinks onto the table. Jason started to dig into his pocket, but Rafe held up his hand.
It's on me. My office, after all.
That afternoon, after a scanty lunch consisting of bread and water, Reverend Milcher sat upstairs at his desk, lost in thought.
What to do to bring the people in, to bring them to God? Don't they know that their immortal souls depend on it? Didn't I preach enough fire and brimstone on the journey from Kansas City to the wilderness of Fury?
He put his head in his hands and silently prayed once again for guidance. Nothing came of it, however, and he dropped his chin to his chest. The cat, Louise, was nursing her kittens in a box beneath his desk. His initial anger quickly fled, though, once he saw her and the pile of gray, tabby, and white that was the kittens. It struck him that she was caring for her brood in the same manner that he had promised the Lord he would look after his people. There was joy in her heart just to have them near her, and joy in their hearts that she was close, so warm and comforting. And it occurred to him that he needed to minister to his flock's needs and wants like a mother cat.
I need to be more mama-like and less lecturing, more comfort and fewer claws. My message needs less barbs, and perhaps my demeanor could be softer as well.
He fell to his knees and clasped his hands before him.
Is that you, great and holy God? Have you given me a sign?
That was enough for him. He lay prostrate on the floor, arms outstretched, his face in the rag rug.
Thank you, Lord. Thank you. Praise be to your name.
He would be softer, more kindly, and less prickly. He would be a friend to his parishioners, not a judge. Up north, Ward Wanamaker and Milton Griggs, Fury's blacksmith, were nearly back to town. Ward had ridden north at dawn and arrived at the Morton place at around noon, his horse having thrown a shoe on the way up there. Milton fixed it for him, and he was thrilled to hear that he was needed in town. Ward had been thinking about Jason, down there with those two gunfighters. Down there all alone. And Ward had come to a conclusion. They needed at least one more man. One more man that was good with a gun and wasn't afraid of nothing. They needed old Wash Keogh. That was who they needed.
Milk, you go on in straight to the marshal's office and check in with Jason. He'll get you pointed in the right direction.
Oh, sure. What about you?
Tell Jason I'm going to fetch Wash Keogh.
He down southeast.
Right, working a claim. Tell Jason I'll be back.
Before Milton had a chance to answer him, Ward tore off at a fast lope toward the eastern corner of the walled town. After the corral was finished, Matt McDonald sent all the hands out, save two who were still painting the fence, to round up every last head of his cattle and get them started home. He actually felt a little better, knowing he'd soon be able to see all at once his entire herd. And Cookie's good lunch hadn't hurt his mood either. By 5, they started to come in. Matt stood out on the porch and watched them wander down the hill. They were heavy with calf, most of them, and he'd told the men not to rush them too much. He didn't want a pen full of aborting cows. When at last the final cow had been ushered into the large corral and the gate closed behind her, he noted that only one cow was missing, not two, as he had previously thought. But one was enough to make him want to call in the cavalry. However, the cavalry had seemed loath to respond to him in the past. He could see no reason to expect any more action now. Curly rode up to the house from the corral.
That's all we could dig up, boss.
Tell the boys they did a good job, Curly. Break out a round of whiskey for them. They deserve it.
Yes, sir, boss. The men will sure appreciate that.
Matt's eyes weren't on him, though. He stared past Curly toward the southern hills, his forehead furrowed.
Boss? What is it, boss?
Matt raised his arm, finger pointed to the horizon.
Do you see what I see?
Kind of hard to see much in this light, boss.
There. There, man, look!
What Matt saw on the distant horizon was smoke. Or dust. He couldn't tell which, but it couldn't be good.
Apache, man! Apache!
He jumped down off the porch and ran for the barn to get his horse. Curly stood there, shaking his head. Sometimes he just plain thought the boss had lost his mind. First off, Curly figured that everybody, including old ladies and dogs, knew that Apache didn't attack at night. By the looks of that dust in the distance, it'd take whatever was making it 3, maybe 4 hours to get this far. He'd never in his life heard of an Apache attack commencing at 10 in the evening. It was most likely just a bunch of dust devils again. But by then, the boss was already galloping past him on the way to town, whipping his horse like crazy.
I were that horse, I'd dump Mr. Matthew McDonald in the nearest patch of cactus and then trot on back home.
Back up in town, Jason was just sitting down to dinner, along with the girls and Rafe Lynch. He'd had Lynch come up around the back of the sheriff's office, and they'd taken the back way home, out of the sight of prying eyes, he hoped. But the girls were thrilled. Jenny had made a pot roast for the occasion, complete with what he remembered his mother using, cut-up potatoes, carrots, and onions. She'd gone all out and baked biscuits, too, and they were so light that he nearly had to stab his fork through them to keep them from floating to the ceiling. A plate of fresh-churned butter and jars of mesquite honey and her cactus jelly completed the feast, and they all made good and satisfying use of it. At last, Rafe leaned back from the table.
Ugh, Miss Jenny, that roast was so good and tender and flavorful it nearly wore me out. And the potatoes and onions, Lord have mercy. I ain't ate this good in a coon's age.
Jenny replied, as she had to most of Rafe's comments during the meal. She flushed right up to her hairline and stared at her lap.
Oh, she is sure as shooting gone on Rafe.
Oddly, the idea didn't bother Jason as much as he'd thought it would. He himself was growing to like the man more and more. And after hearing Rafe's explanation of the Samson Davis matter, and another different slaying on the way home, he was beginning to see Rafe as a victim of circumstance. Rafe's rescue of Jenny earlier that day hadn't hurt either. Jason was enough of a lawman, though, to avoid going with the idea completely. It wasn't Ward this time, or at least he was fairly certain it wasn't. He ripped the napkin from his collar and marched toward the front door. Jason looked at the dozen or so people gathered and arguing in his front yard.
Hey! Will everybody please shut up?
We want you to do something about Matt McDonald.
Salmon Kendall crossed his arms over his chest as if that was the answer to everything that was wrong with the world.
What's he done this time?
He's running up and down Main Street screaming, "Indians, Apache, and come at you cowards!"
Gus Furling went up on the stockade and said he couldn't see a thing.
Hattie nodded vehemently in agreement. Dr. Morelli stepped up.
That's right, nothing. I went up myself and checked.
Where was Ward during all this?
Nobody knows. We can't find him.
All right, let me tell Jenny where I'm headed.
After hearing a very shortened version of Matthew McDonald and what he currently believed to be his problem, Rafe insisted on accompanying Jason on his short jaunt to town. Jason had mixed feelings about this, but with Megan's brother being the cause of the ruckus and a front yard full of townsfolk about ready to equip themselves with weaponry, he didn't have the time or the energy to pull Rafe aside and explain things. He just went, and Rafe tagged along. After they turned the corner and headed down toward Maine, now followed by 20 or so irate citizens, Jason turned his head.
Salmon, run down to the office and see if Ward's turned up yet. If he hasn't, you're in charge, so I'll tell you different. I'm gonna check Abigail's.
He didn't look back. He trusted Salmon. Instead, he forged ahead to Abigail's place, turned the corner, and swung wide the doors. Rafe entered right behind him. Abby turned round at the sound of their entry.
Good evening, Jason. Rafe, you two decide to go slumming.
No, Abby, no. We were just searching for Matt McDonald, that's all.
Well, the son of a bitch ain't in here, that's for sure.
Yes, ma'am.
Jason grabbed Rafe by his other arm and exited Abby's.
Come on, we gotta find Matt before somebody kills him just for being a jackass.
Just on general principle, you mean?
You've been hanging around me too much.
Yeah, maybe so.
And then, clear down at the other end of the street, they saw Matthew McDonald backing out of the saloon.
Bunch of lily-livered cowards! That's where you are! I thought Fury had some real men living in her.
I think that'll about do it.
Jason began marching down the center of the street, with Rafe following along, aping his speed as well as the disgusted expression on his face.
McDonald! Matt McDonald! Hold it down!
Well, if it isn't Marshal Chicken Shit and Deputy Dog Turd.
Matt hadn't recognized Rafe, and Jason had the sense to leave well enough alone.
You want to go to jail for disturbing the peace? Keep on hollering. Well then, now that we've got everybody calmed down, what seems to be your problem, Matthew?
What's always my problem? I've got trouble out at the ranch, and nobody'll help.
What trouble? Apache?
Yes! I can't get it through anybody's head. By now, they're probably swarming the ranch, killing off all my hands, making off with all my livestock, and nobody gives a good goddamn.
He put his head in his hands, and suddenly both Megan and Jenny, whom Jason hadn't realized had joined the following crowd, ran past him and to Matt's side. Jenny looked up and straight at Jason.
Jason, you go out there. Don't go as the marshal. Go as my brother.
But Jenny...
Don't you butt Jenny me. Just go. Now.
Jason had been about to tell her that Apache didn't raid at night, but he could see that right now she wasn't going to hear anything he had to say. He was stuck.
All right, but I hope you'll feel stupid when we don't turn up anything.
And you best save us some dessert.
Well, you're going?
I gotta work off some of that good dinner before I treat myself to any more of these ladies' victuals.
Your funeral.
Jason glanced over and saw Salmon Kendall leaning out of the front door of the marshal's office.
Salmon, you stay here and watch over the town.
He turned back toward the stable. Then he stopped and looked back over his shoulder and saw that McDonald was just standing there, stunned.
Move it, Matt.
The call woke Matt from his trance, and he dog-trotted to catch up with them. They got Jason's Palomino and Rafe's Bay tacked up and ready, and set out, with Matt leading, toward the south and the Double M Ranch. They came in sight of the ranch, and Matt almost looked disappointed when it sat quietly on its site. With a big new corral filled with livestock, and Curly standing outside against the ranch house porch railing smoking a cigarette.
Quiet sort of raid, ain't it?
Yeah, the kind old Matt usually gets out here.
Now just a minute, Fury. They might not be here yet, but they're coming. There were signs, I tell you, signs!
Think we ought to go down and look, just in case? Gotta start cooling these horses down one way or the other.
He was right. The horses were lathered and blowing because Matt had pushed them into an all-out gallop once they got clear of town.
I suppose.
Jason started his horse walking toward the ranch.
Finally!
Jason and Rafe exchanged glances. Apparently a walk was too slow for Matt, and he kicked his gelding into a canter. Jason shrugged. He and Rafe held it down to a walk. When Jason and Rafe were within 3 lengths of the house, Rafe did the unthinkable. Jason was about to draw on Rafe when he realized that nobody was dead or even injured, except for a fat 6-foot sidewinder, thrashing its last in the dust 3 feet from Matt's right boot.
Hate them damn things. Sorry if it scared anybody, but by the time I saw it coming in the lantern light...
Thanks, Rafe.
Thanks.
Thanks.
The snake, in its death throes, lashed Matt's leg, and he vaulted up on the porch.
You gotta watch them suckers. They'll keep thrashing around for an hour sometimes, even if you shoot the head clean off.
Jason leaned forward and squinted through the dim light at the snake.
Believe you shot the head clean off that one, Rafe. Good going.
I'll try to do what I can.
You got somebody to walk these horses out, Matt? I think we could all use a drink, too.
Whew! Best idea I heard all night. You know, I believe I could use a couple of whiskeys, too. I'm pretty dadgum parched. Chasing Ghost Apache wears me out. Don't wear you right down to a nub, Matt.
Rafe handed his reins to Curly, climbed up on the porch, and put his hand on Matt's arm like Matt was his new best friend.
I heard rumors in town you're pretty well stocked out here, Matt. Hope they were right.
He proceeded to lead a confused Matt inside the house. Jason and Curly just looked at each other until Curly shrugged and took Jason's reins from him.
Man wants a hot walker, he gets a hot walker. Steve, come up here and get these horses. Have one for me while you're in there. You know, I don't believe I'm ever going to understand him so long as I live.
You're in good company, Curly.
Careful to avoid the dead snake, Jason stepped up on the porch, then turned and followed Rafe and Matthew into the house. 2 hours later, a drunken Rafe and an only slightly more sober Jason threw wide the door to Matt's house and stepped out on the porch, or as Matthew liked to call it, his veranda, and took a couple of good, deep breaths of the night-chilled desert air. Jason came away from the experience still thinking that Matt was an asshole of the first order. He didn't know what Rafe thought. He was one tough fella to read. Their horses had been properly walked out, then watered, and stood tied to the porch railing, dozing.
Let's walk or jog them back, all right?
Yeah, good idea.
They both checked on their girth straps and their bridles and mounted up, while Jason puzzled over what had just happened.
He sure one peckerwood box of tricks, ain't he?
That he is. That he is. Just never heard it put quite that way before. The only reason we didn't get a bigger crowd at the house is that everybody else owes him money.
Oh, yeah. He owns a bank, don't he?
Yep.
And his sister, Miss Megan?
She runs it for him. Does a damn good job of it, too.
I think she told me that. Strange job for a female, but if you're good at something, you ought to do it, I figure.
Rafe rolled himself a cigarette as they rode along, which put Jason in the mood. Pulled out his fixin's bag, too.
Rafe, how'd you get started on your so-called life of crime, anyhow?
That thing with my daddy, I reckon. That was the first. And once there was paper out on me, it seemed like there was some sort of dumb cluck hiding behind every tree trying to kill me for the bounty. Didn't seem fair somehow. After I killed a couple of bounty-happy kids in self-defense, I got to thinking what I just told you. You know, if you're good at something, do it. So I hired myself out to a rancher who was having troubles with cattle thieves.
What happened?
Well, the trouble with the rustlers stopped. They don't get put on wanted posters, you know, unless they're on them already. I mean, unless they get tagged for doing some other crime. My boys are fairly new to the trade, I reckon. That are fairly good at not getting caught.
Well, how many?
Three. Killed the boss man and his ramrod. Sat down with the kid helping him, threatened to castrate him if I ever caught him thieving cattle again. He agreed, and I let him go. You ain't ever seen such a quick exit in your life as that kid made.
Jason smiled, his head shaking. If he'd been that kid, he would have beat it, too. The rest of the ride into town proved uneventful, except that by the time they came in sight of Fury, they had both sobered up to a large extent. When Rafe had seen to his horse, he walked along back to Jason's house, where Jason put his Palomino up alongside Jenny's.
Two Palominos?
Well, Jenny needed a horse, and she'd always admired Cleo, so I thought I'd keep it in the family, you know.
So what Jenny wants, Jenny gets, right?
Yeah, that's about right. Now, if we don't get up there and demand dessert pretty damn fast, there's gonna be hell to pay, at least for me. You get to run off and hold up down at the saloon, but I have to live here.
They found the girls in the living room playing checkers.
Well, it's about time.
No Indians?
Nope. Jenny, we're here for some of your world-famous dessert.
You're lucky I didn't toss it out.
Miss Jenny, seems to me you got a lot of attitude for somebody who made her brother ride out there on some fool's errand. Jason, if I was you, I'd think a visit to the woodshed would be in order.
Not only did Jenny not utter a word while serving them dessert, but she gave them extra large portions of what turned out to be apple crumb cake. Jason reminded himself to buy even more dried apples come fall. She worked magic with them. Megan made up for Jenny's silence by asking questions. She particularly enjoyed the part about Rafe shooting the snake and her brother vaulting the three steps up to the porch.
Hell, didn't think it was that funny.
Oh, you would if you knew Matt.
I think you're all too hard on him. He's just trying to protect what's his, that's all. And you, Megan, you're his sister. I'd be ashamed if I were you.
I think it's good for at least one person in the family to have a sense of humor. That sure was a fine dessert, Miss Jenny. I hope you'll invite me again sometime.
Rafe wiped the last traces of apple crumb cake from his mouth, then smoothed his napkin out on the table. He pushed back his chair.
Coffee, Rafe?
Jenny glared daggers at him.
I thank you for the offer, Jason, but I'd best be getting back to my no-good ways, which means playing cards and drinking up to the saloon.
Both men had taken off their hats when they entered the house, and now Rafe took his from the hat rack and swept the hand holding his hat wide and to the side.
Ladies, Marshall, it's been a pleasure.
Best take the back way, Rafe, and tell Salmon that everything's all right out at the Double M.
Rafe's reply was another bow, then a swing of his hat to the top of his head, with a tip of the brim to the ladies. Jason closed the door behind him and went back to the kitchen.
What's wrong with you tonight, Jen?
Me? What's wrong with me? You're the one who wanted to kill him just a few days ago. You're the one who was all head up just because Megan and I just talked to him at Abigail's. You're the one who...
If you're gonna get up a lynch mob, just do it and quit jabbering at me. I'm the marshal, you know. And I had a right to be concerned about that little meeting. Not only as a lawman, but as your brother. And I didn't want to kill him so much as I just wanted him out of my town. We still don't know what element he'll attract. Though we've got one gunslinger after him already.
Jenny just stood there with her arms folded. Practically the definition of the word resolute.
It's why I told him to take the back way to the saloon.
Jason glanced at Megan, who was fiddling with her coffee cup, just to keep out of it, he figured, and didn't look up. Jason shoved back his chair and stood up.
Well, I'll take my leave of you ladies, then. Good night.
He turned on his heel and, without another word, headed for his bedroom. Solomon came up the stairs, having closed the store and locked the doors for the night.
Did you hear what Jason did, Rachel? This is rich.
Hush, Solomon. You'll wake the children.
His two oldest boys were still awake, noses buried in the dime novels he'd gotten for them yesterday. But the youngest boy, and of course baby Sarah, were sleeping soundly. And so, it seemed, was Samson Davis. He half sat, half lay on Solomon's favorite chair, his head on his barrel chest, black hair hanging in his eyes, roweled spurs digging angled holes into Solomon's ottoman.
This I will not have.
Perhaps this was how they behaved in Samson's family. Maybe they all went to sleep in chairs and put their boots up on the furniture with their spurs on. He greeted Rachel and the boys before he did anything else. He dutifully admired Abraham's school project, a catapult, and helped David with a mathematics problem. And then he turned toward Samson and discovered that Samson was not only awake, but on his feet and standing in the kitchen right next to the clock.
My goodness, Samson, you scared me to death.
What's the time?
8:30. Why?
I have an errand to run. Can I get a key to the store so I can let myself back in?
Who has errands to run at 8:30 of an evening? And give him a key to the store?
There were so many things wrong with that idea that Solomon couldn't even begin to list them. But despite a sidelong glance from Rachel, he dug into his pocket and pulled out the key and handed it over.
Be certain the door is locked after you go through it.
Samson tossed the key into the air, then grabbed it again, sticking it into his breast pocket.
Will do.
And then, without further ado, he started down the same stairs that Solomon had just climbed up. Solomon and Rachel just stood there, watching him disappear down the staircase.
Get him out! Solomon, I am your wife. Does that mean nothing to you?
What? You're not making sense.
When you are not here, he orders me around like I am his wife, or his maid. It's always, make me a sandwich, or don't you have any knishes, or give me the beef brisket. Do I look like a short order cook to you, my husband? And when he is not eating, he is asking all sorts of funny questions about the town and the people. I am telling you, Solomon, this man has none of my trust.
What sort of questions?
I don't know. Just odd questions. He asked where people in town rent rooms, and that one I was glad to hear because I thought he was thinking about moving out. But then he asked about the saloons, and where they were, and if I'd ever heard of somebody or other Rafe something, I can't remember. And then he wanted knishes, and I said we didn't have any right now. And he says, what kind of household is this anyway? And I said, the kind that doesn't make knishes at the drop of a hat. And he cleans his gun all the time around the children. This afternoon, I caught him about to hand a loaded pistol to David.
Stop already. I get the picture. This is something I should talk to Jason about, and as soon as possible.
He glanced at the clock. Almost 9. Salmon Kendall had dropped by earlier and told him about Jason riding out to the McDonald Ranch with somebody called Rafe Lynch. He had agreed with Salmon that there probably weren't any Apache, other than those in Matthew's mind. And when he asked who Rafe Lynch was, thinking Salmon would say he was just someone from the wagon train, Salmon surprised him. He said he was sworn to secrecy and couldn't say any more, but that Solomon could ask the marshal for himself. He wondered if Jason was back yet, and he wondered if it was too late to go knocking on the marshal's door.
Solomon.
Don't worry, Rachel. I need to go out too, to go to Jason's house. If Samson gets back before me, do not tell him where I've gone, all right? And I promise you, he'll be gone very soon, our house guest.
Solomon kissed her lips, then trotted down the stairs to fetch his extra key from the cash register. Jason had just blown out his lamp and was in the process of getting his pillow just right.
Jason! Jason, are you still up? It's important!
Solomon?
He went to his window, which overlooked the front yard.
Solomon, that you?
Yes, it's me already, and I have something important to tell you.
He didn't waste any time. He came right to the window Jason was leaning out of and rapidly told Jason of his conversation with Rachel.
I'm worried. What sort of man have I given shelter in my home?
Jason mentally kicked himself for not having earlier asked the name of the Cohen's houseguest.
The worst kind. You best get him out of there first thing tomorrow. Send him down to the boarding house or something.
But how am I...
Make up some excuse or other. Tell him Rachel or one of the kids is sick.
But...
And don't give me any of that crap about lying being a sin. God'll forgive you on this one. Trust me. Did you say he went out tonight?
Yes, and he has a key to the store.
That's the least of your troubles. Now go on home and act like everything's normal. Just fine, okay? And for God's sake, don't mention the name Rafe Lynch around him. He's here to kill him.
Mein Gott.
Yeah, what you said. Now get going. I gotta put some clothes back on and get up to the office.
Jason left the house and took the back way, which was rapidly becoming an alley, over to the marshal's office and burst through the back door.
Salmon! Salmon, we've got to keep Samson Davis from finding...
He burst through the second door and found Mayor Kendall sitting at his desk with his legs up, and across from him, calmly smoking a cigarette, sat Rafe Lynch, slouched in a chair.
Rafe Lynch?
Samson Davis on the hunt for him?
Actively.
Yep. We saw him walk past the window about a half hour ago. Went into the saloon.
Probably still in there giving those fellows a hard time.
Probably. If he gives him as hard a time as Matthew did, he's liable to find himself tarred and feathered.
Jason scratched at his chin, thinking.
I got an idea. For tonight, anyway. But I doubt you're going to like it too much, Rafe.
Both Rafe and Salmon, who seemed to have taken quite a liking to Rafe, waited, with their heads tilted and curious expressions.
Rafe, tonight I talked to Solomon Cohen. He tells me that Davis may be closer than we thought to bushwhacking you. I think you ought to spend the night right here in the jail.
Leaning back against the wall, he folded his arms, prepared for the verbal onslaught he was about to take.
You got yourself a smart marshal there, Mayor.
Good idea, Jason.
Jason wasn't sure whether he'd gone crazy or everybody else had.
Salmon, you can go on home now. I'll hold the fort tonight.
Where's Ward, anyway? You didn't say.
Oh, he got this harebrained idea that the only thing that was going to save the town was old Wash Keogh. Rode out to his claim to find him.
Well, I wish he'd hurry and dig him up, or else come on back alone. I feel better when you got someone to back you up.
Well, don't worry, Salmon. I'll be fine. Don't give it a second thought.
How about a third thought? I'm thinking this'll make a great story for the Weekly.
Salmon was referring to the Fury Titan, the scrawny excuse for a newspaper that he put out once a week.
Maybe. We'll have to wait till the end of the week to see what happens.
Hope the story don't end in my obituary.
Yeah, sure. As if anything's gonna happen in Fury, of all places.
Yeah, sure, you say that now. The way I see it, a town called Fury is just asking for whatever trouble it can suck in. Benevolent, now that's a name for a town. Or peaceful, like that. Don't be looking at me like I'm full of sheep dip, Jason. I'm older than you. I've been places and seen things.
Like what, for example?
I've been to war, for one thing. Now, you're probably too young. I fought for the North. Johnny Bluecoat, that was me. I seen men dying right and left, cut up by butchering sawbones. Seen them left to die when even the sawbones wouldn't carve them up. Seen the look on the faces of the defeated. Seen them rounded up like cattle. Seen them all dressed in rags with those hollow eyes and missing arms and legs, or an eye. Sometimes all three weren't pretty.
Jason wanted to say that his older brother had been in the fight too, but that wasn't like saying you'd been there yourself. He took the wiser path and kept his mouth shut.
You want I should keep going, or you got my point?
I got the point.
but don't see what that has to do with the names of towns.
Rafe just shook his head, then stood up.
Let's see. Cell number one or cell number two?
He looked back at Jason, who shrugged.
Cell number one, then. And, without further going on, I bid you good night, Jason. Say, you got any whiskey in the place?
Jason, who was sitting behind his desk by this time, pulled open a bottom drawer and lifted out a bottle of whiskey and two glasses.
Jason Fury, you are my savior.
Rafe took no extra time getting back across the room and sitting down opposite Jason. He took the glass Jason had poured out for him.
Now, if you had a deck of cards hanging around, my life would be complete.
Grinning, Jason reached into the same drawer and pulled out a deck of playing cards, bound up in one of Ward's broken shoestrings. He untied the deck and began to shuffle.
Play for matches?
Hell, at this point I play for imaginary penguins.
Jason began to deal.
Five-card draw okay by you?
Perfect.
Southeast of town, in the starlit dark of the desert foothills, Ward Wanamaker was camped near a stand of prickly pear cactus. After giving up for the day, he'd made a small fire, cooked himself a rabbit, and now he drank the coffee he'd been brewing. He only had tomorrow left to look, because he was about to run out of water, even with rationing.
Where in the hell can Wash be?
He'd looked everywhere he could think of, and a few other places too, but no Wash. He'd found his campsite, recently used but completely vacant, and came to the conclusion that either he'd moved or he'd gone back to town. He was beginning to think he'd gone back to town, because he sure as hell wasn't here. He'd followed the various tracks and trails Wash had made through the brush, but in the end, they always ended up back at the now deserted campsite.
Blast your hidewash, Keo! Where'd you get to anyway?
I'm right here, you plain idiot!
Ward stood up, spilling his coffee. He looked out onto the dark distance.
Wash? Wash Keo, that you?
Well, it ain't U.S. Grant, that's for blame sure. You got coffee?
Yeah, I do. Got about a rabbit left, too.
Well, you don't need to shout, Ward.
Ward whirled to his left, his hand automatically going to his gun. But it never even left the holster, for into the firelight stepped Wash Keo himself, leading his horse and looking beat to a dried-out husk.
You promised coffee.
Sure, Wash, sure.
Ward scrambled to pour him out a cup, which Wash took with trembling hands. He finished the first cup, then a second, then a third, before he thought of his horse.
Holy Christ, you got any horse water?
Ward went to his gear and pulled free a canvas bag partially filled with water. He opened it as he walked over to Wash, who took off his hat and held it out upside down. Ward knew what he wanted and poured water directly into the hat. Wash offered it to his grateful horse, who drank it down to the bottom.
You'll have to wait a bit for more, old girl.
He patted her neck, then returned the hat to his head. A bead of leftover water ran down his face and neck.
You're leaking a little bit, Wash.
Wash went back and sat beside the campfire.
Don't I know it, and don't I love it. You say something about a rabbit?
Ward pointed to it, and Wash inhaled it almost before Ward noticed that he'd picked it up.
You got more?
Afraid not. Sorry.
Don't be sorry. Not your fault I come dragging in here in such a pitiful condition. What brings you out this way, anyhow?
You.
Me? Why?
We got a gunfighter in town. Rafe Lynch is his name. Heard of him?
Wash shook his head.
Well, he's wanted for killing 8 folks over in California. And we got another one gunning for him.
Whoever said Fury was a quiet little town sure didn't live there, huh?
Yeah. And now, Jason didn't send me out here or anything, but I thought of you right off. If ever we needed a man who was good with a gun to back us up, it's now. You game?
I'm game, all right. Just leave me to him and point him out.
With Wash Keo on board, we can fight off anybody.